Okay, so we can resume the lecture. So we were just talking about before the break what XML consists of, and we are now going to see very quickly different parts of this XML structure and what these different parts stands for. Okay, so we have a list of all these different components of this XML structure. We have elements, attributes, entities, text, C data section, processing, and comments. And we are now going to see each of them individually very quickly. These are very easy, and most of them you might have known from this XML or from the other scripting languages of the web if you have been working on that. So the very first thing that you notice here is this XML declaration. Like with HTML and the comment that you made, the very first line is what defines what the type of document it is. In your PHP, you have this less than sign, question mark, and then the PHP script, right? So for each of these different languages, you have some processing instructions for the compiler to tell it what is going to happen in the document and what the compiler should expect. So here you see the very the first line, which is given in the example. It's a less than sign, question mark, XML. That defines that whatever we are going to write is going to follow the XML format, and it's part of this XML document now. Okay, so here this line consists of three parts. Here we see that the very first thing, version, is the XML version that we are using just to tell the compilers and the browsers and your application programs ahead on what to expect. The code can contain some elements from the XML version 1. If you are using some XML version 1.2 or later, they might have updated elements which might not be already present in the previous versions. But all these browsers, they usually use this latest version, so they can recognize what to expect based on this. So they will know that we have the XML code which is going to be followed by this line. So this line is a processing instruction for the compilers, and all these browsers have the compilers incorporated into it. Okay, so if you write and check your XML code in the browser, you will not see an error, but you will see the compiled result, whatever it might be. So this second portion that you see is the encoding. It tells the character set, the language that you are using for describing this XML code. And there are different standards, encoding standards, that are quite commonly used on the World Wide Web. Okay, the very common one is the UTF-8, which supports all the major international languages, including Norwegian also. So if you have some special characters in Norwegian which are not present in English language, and if you are using some encoding scheme which does not recognize these Norwegian characters, then the browser will not display those characters correctly. Okay, so this is what you need the encoding. That's why you need to specify this encoding scheme. But all these encoding schemes, they can very well understand different characters in different languages. For example, if we have a script in Arabic language, the characters are totally different from the English or from the Norwegian. So you define your compiler and your program and your applications that what to expect, what kind of code is there, so they'll be able to understand and interpret. The third line, third parameter that you see is the standalone. Now in XML, like in different applications, programming languages, you can define the structure or the different formatting styles or different parameters. In XML also, you have the possibility of using external document type definitions. Since we have seen that the XML, it has the possibility of defining user types element. So the elements that we can define in XML can be HTML elements also, because it's an extension of HTML, and we can have our own user specified elements. Like we saw in the very first example, where we have to field, from, message. All these are user defined elements. They are not defined in the HTML. So in that case, we can define the type of those elements in a separate file, and that file is known as document type definition, what those elements stand for. As I gave you an example earlier and a scenario that if you are working on a team and if you have many developers working on the same thing, and if they came to see the XML file, and if they do not know what that XML element stands for, right? So they can refer to that DTD file and they can check what it is. So it's an additional file which is not necessary, which is not mandatory, but you can specify it. So this is the very first line that you will see in the XML file. Not necessarily they have the same additional attributes as given here. If you do not give the encoding, whatever the default encoding of your browser is, that will be picked. It's usually UTF-8. But in this case, we have specified the encoding. If you do not give standalone, that means that you are not using any external DTT. If you are using any external DTT, you could link it over here, right? So then we have XML elements. XML elements are same as HTML elements. They are enclosed in the less than and greater than signs. Okay, so here we see title is an element, right? And whatever is between is the text, and then we have the closing element. So whatever element you pick, you have to close it in this case. Okay, so this is a simple content where we say that this is the title and it's a user defined title, but this title is also used in the HTML code, right? So when you're defining your HTML page, you can give the title of the page. Then you can have mixed content. For example, its P stands for the start of the new paragraph. It's an HTML tag. The tags in the HTML are same as the elements in XML. Okay, remember we said that XML is an extension of HTML. That means it takes all the attributes of HTML and it can have its own attribute. So these are all the different elements. So this P is an element because it's between the tags. So whatever is between the tag is an element, very much like the HTML. Okay. And then here we see that we have mixed element. So first we have this paragraph or passage element, and then we have strong element. This strong makes the text bold. Okay. So here we see that this no text is made into a strong element, and then this strong element gets closed over here. So whatever we are starting, we need to close it. If we do not close it, XML will not compile. It will give an error. Okay. In HTML case, if it's a web page, it will compile and it will run. And it might not display the content as it should. Even having the errors, it should be able to run. But the XML is created in such a way that if you have even a single error, the compiler will just stop at the very first error and it will not execute. Even that mistake is minor, you will not be able to see the output. Okay. So that's what you have to keep in mind. So when you are writing your XML code, whatever tag you open means start with, you need to close that tag explicitly. Okay. HTML takes care of it by itself because it has been designed in that way. The XML has been designed in a way to have proper opening tags and proper closing tags. If it finds error somewhere, it will not run. It will halt immediately. Okay. Another thing that you can do in here, we see we have mixed content. That means we have a passage here. We have the other elements. Let's say I put a line break, and if I have some text here, and then I need to close this line break, and then I need to close this passage. Okay, so this is valid for HTML and valid for XML also. Yes. That's true. That's true. It should be self-closing. In this case, it's not the best of the examples that I've given here. Okay, but we will see in the next slides. Okay, but you are right in this case. Okay, but just to give you an example and just to tell you what is different between HTML and XML, right? So paragraph, what it will do, or passage, it will have the next, take it to the next line. Line break, what does it do? It returns the line feed. That means it will start from the next line. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that whatever elements we are adding in HTML, you normally won't care about the sequence when you close them. Okay, for example, in this case, if I remove this from here, this will still run in HTML. This is valid. In XML, it might give error because we have not closed it explicitly. It's self-closing. In XML, in latest versions, it might still execute. But we need to close it. Okay, so if we are closing it here, this will work in HTML. But this will not work in XML. Because in XML, we can do the nesting, but the nesting has to be proper. The elements which open first have to be on the same level when they are closing. Right? So in this case, we have the line break here, and we are closing it here. Okay? So we cannot do that. This will give an error in the XML. But in the HTML page, it will work perfectly, even though this is not the well-formed HTML page. Okay? But this will cause issues and this will cause problems. So you can rearrange the closing elements, tags in HTML. It will still work. In XML, it might give you problems and the compiler will not be able to pick it up. So here we see that we have the strong element, we closed it, and then we go to the next one. And similarly, you can have these kinds of line breaks, but whatever you do, you have to close them in XML. In HTML, even if you write like this and if you do not close it, it will still work without giving you any errors. But XML follows the well-formed XML formatting. That means that you have to explicitly define the closing tag. Okay? That's why we need to close it. Now you can write the first form, opening tag and the closing tag for the BR line break, or you could follow the second alternative. In this case, it works because it is a self-closing element. Okay. Okay, so we have seen that the XML are more or less like a trees. You know, and what does trees have? Root. You know, and what else? From the roots, it has a trunk. From the trunks, it branches out to leaves, right? So the tree have root, and it branches out to the leaves. The same structure is followed in the XML. You always have a root or a parent node. And from that parent node, you could have further branches. And these branches are the hierarchy. Remember, in the very first slides, I was asking you what is hierarchy. So this hierarchy is the branching of this tree. And in that branches, you could have different nodes, child nodes, okay, on the same level or in the further level. So in this example, we see that we have the title. Okay, this is an element. Then we have the passage, strong tags, and then we have the break, BR. Now these are all in the same hierarchy here, as you see now. But we see that when you represent or when you create this XML file, you have a root file. That means we are starting this element, we need to close it somewhere. Okay, and in that root you could have child For example, if you are going to the next level, so this is a level below this level. So the first level is the root level, then you have a child level, and you can have further child levels also, and you can go to as much leveling or nesting as your application demands. Right. So then we have attributes. Attributes are the additional parameters that provide information about a particular tag. Right. So here we see we have an element which is image, img in this case. Now we have not closed this image bracket here, but we are defining it further, that what this image means for this, in this case, okay, or for the application which we are using. So here we see that we have height, width, and the source image. These are different information, and these are the additional information that defines this image element, and we can have as many attributes as we want in XML file. Okay. So here is another example, and these attributes can have values specified in them. So in the next case, you see we have an element A, which is the tag of HTML that defines that there is an hyperlink. So you are linking something, okay, or you are pointing to something, to some link. And what it is actually, it's a link that is given over here. So this is the value of this attribute hreference. And this attribute is part of this element, which is A here. Kay. And you notice that the values of the attributes are quoted either in double quotes or in single quote, but they have to be consistent. If you are using double quotes, you have to close them with double quotes. If you are using single quotes, you have to close them with the single quotes. You cannot do the opposite. For example, here you have the value which starts with the double quote, and here you are closing with the single quote. So quite often when you're writing your XML file very quickly, you might end up something like this. So you need to be careful about that. Kay. Now we have been talking about the XML and the HTML. In the HTML, you can be a bit careless in the formatting of how you are rearranging the elements. In XML, you cannot. In XML, you have to be explicitly define the closing tags. If you start an element, it has to close. In XML, you need to have one root element. You cannot have more than one root element. Okay? And then you can have correct nesting of elements. That means if you have one root element, you can have further nesting in that. Right? When you write complex applications, you can have quite detailed elements nesting, and it can be as much as your application demands. But then you will see what is the optimal nesting that you can do. Okay, but there is no hard and fast rule, and all elements have an explicit end. We have already seen case sensitive names. So if you have an element that starts with root here, it has to have the same case sensitivity when you are closing it. If I replace it, for example, with the small r, it will give you error. It will not compile. Okay. So it is case sensitive. Since it's a user defined tags, so you can define two different tags here, with one with, let's say, capital R and the other one with small r. But whatever tag you are defining, these are two different tags. These are not same tags. So even if you have an uppercase or lowercase, it becomes a totally different element. Kay. Attribute values in quotes that we have already seen in the previous slides. One attribute cannot appear more than one inside an element. So one element can have only one attribute. For example, we saw the image element, and the image element has width and height. So the image element cannot have two widths or two heights. It should always be one. And you cannot have comments inside the text. You cannot do like this. You cannot have comment inside the root element. And also you cannot have the less than sign and and sign in the text content. And why is it so? Can anyone think why we cannot have less than sign in the text? For example, if I have title, and if I close the title here, and if I write some text, which is, let's say, IMT2571, okay, less than let's say something like this. Okay, so I have used this less than element inside the text. Now we cannot have these kinds of elements or these kinds of things inside the text, because the interpreter, whenever it sees this kind of less than sign, it thinks it's a start of an element. So when it's parsing this text, it will come here and it will think, okay, we are supposed to have the element, but this is not an element. I've used this as a less than sign, as an equality measure, but in this case it's false, so we cannot have that. There are different alternatives how to achieve this. So this is a very quick not to crab, we have quite plenty in them, but you can very quickly, now based on what we have seen, you might be able to pick some errors from this code. Okay, can you very quickly see what is wrong with this? Yeah, so the first one is the form is not all the same in the opening and closing. Yes. Yeah, so we have just seen that we can use this. If you run this code in the HTML page, it will work properly. But if you use XML validators to validate this code, you will get an error because we have used this line break and we have not closed it. So we need to close it. There are three more probably errors in this case. Kay. Yes? That's true. And that's for both places. Right? And you, yes? That's basically a text. So I think that should work. It's like this. So this is a tag, and this is the text. But you can think more and maybe find another one. Okay, I'll leave it to you guys to actually check. But now you can at least visualize these errors. But if you have been used to of working on the HTML page, it might be very difficult for you to locate, because it will execute properly in HTML form. But when you are trying to compile it in the XML, it might not work. Okay, so there are some notations that we have to be also careful with the XML names, what you can use as an XML name for the elements and for the tags. Okay, so here you see some of the acceptable names that you can use. An XML name notation usually follows the same pattern as with any other programming language. Like the name cannot start with the numbers. Okay, it cannot start with the special characters. It cannot have spaces, so the name have to be a single compound name. Even if you are using, let's say, first name, last name, there should not be any space. Either you use a dash or you use an underscore or different things. So this is very self-explanatory. Also, you cannot use XML as the prefix, because this is reserved keyword, so you cannot use that. Okay. The other ones are pretty much very same and very similar to the other languages that you have been using. Now we come to the entities and the entity references. We have seen that why we cannot use this less than sign, because it gives error in this case, because the interpreter thinks that it's the start of another element. You can use the greater than sign, however, because the greater than sign will work. Why it will work? For example, if you have a greater than sign here, it will work, because when the compiler starts to interpret, it will not see the less than sign, so it will not know that it's the start of the element. So it will treat that symbol as a normal symbol, as a part of the text, and it will not have any issues with that. But still, the good practice is that for all these special characters, you use these codes. So if I have to solve these issues, and if I want the text, it appears correctly, so I can use its code. And the code is less than. Okay. If it's a greater than, it will be GT, greater than. Right? And for the and, it's ampere. For the quote, it's quotes. For this, it's apostrophe S. Because even if you have single comma somewhere in the text, it will create problems, because the compiler will think it as a start of the value of the attribute. But it's not a value, it's a string that we are using, it's a character. So instead of that, writing these symbols, you can use the codes for these symbols, and these are basically the references. Okay? And you can test this in your HTML code also, because this is taken, these are coming from there actually. These are the property of the HTML document. And then we have the text and the character parsing. So whatever we are writing between these elements is a text. Okay. And the XML compilers and interpreters, they parse this text by checking them, what values do they contain. And since they check all these elements when they are parsing, if an element comes, a symbol comes, which can create problems, okay, so the compiler can halt. That's why we need to use these references. But if you want to display the less than sign instead of this, and if you want your text does not been interrogated by your compiler, that means it displays whatever you are writing, it displays, it should appear as it is. You can use the character data. Okay. So whatever you define in this, it will appear as it is. So the compiler will not evaluate these elements in this case. So they will not create any problems now, because you have specified that all this. So here we have the expression, which is the starting tag. You have the closing tag, which is here. So everything is good. Now you have this length greater than 0. You are doing some computation. And length less than 256. If you write like this without this C data element, your compiler will halt. Because there is a greater than sign, there is a less than sign, it will halt here. It will also halt at these AND signs. Because it will consider it as some special characters to take some actions. Now, what you can do, if you want to express this expression as it is, you can use this C data. That means character data, parse this character data without going further into this line. So it will not evaluate this line, and it will just display whatever it's in there. Okay? And then we have another problem here. Right? So we have an expression, the same one, and we have a text which is given here. And it will give problems. Why it will give problems? Because we have seen that if we try to give these signs, okay, AND sign, greater than sign, less than sign, if we are going to use any of these signs in the text of this tags, it will create problems. So here we see we have a greater than sign and less than sign. So we definitely have a problem. This XML code will not work. Okay. How we can solve it? we can solve it like this previous example using the C data. Okay. If I ask you to solve this without using C data, what you can do then? We know the bad elements. We know the elements that are going to crash the compiler, stop the compiler. You know, what is this? Greater than sign, less than sign, and the two and signs. Can we replace them? We can replace them with their entity references. Okay. For the greater than sign, we can use and LT. For the less than sign, we can use and LT less than. For the greater than, we can use and GT. Okay. And for the and sign, we have this AMP. So we can replace those two and signs with this text. So by replacing the symbols which can create problems using these references, the XML code will be okay to execute. Right? So then we can have comments. As with any other programming languages, we need comments for the users to understand what we are trying to do. So if I'm writing a very big code, I need to have the comments for myself. So the compilers, as soon as it sees this kind of symbols, it understands that there is some comments written in the code by the user for the user. So when the compiler sees these kinds of symbols, it does not compile that line. It does not process that line. Okay? And it goes to the next line. That means in this comments you can write whatever you want, but that is for your own understanding. Okay, so if I'm writing a very big code and I can describe in the comments that this is a function to create a rectangle, so you can write a comment and then you can write some code, and then lower you can write in the comments this is a function that applies linear gradient to the above code. Okay, and then you can write the linear gradient method or function. So you can have these comments, but they are only for the user purposes. So here is an example of how to write the comment. So we have the tag, which is the starting tag photo database, and the code is still there, but you do not see it should have the closing tag also, because whatever we are starting, we have to explicitly close. And then you can see there is an example of images database dump. Less than sign, explanation mark, two dash signs, it's the start of the comment. And then whatever you write in between, you have to close the comment by adding two dash signs and the greater than sign. Right? So whatever you write in this, it's for your own understanding. And that's the example of how to do it. And here is an example which tells us how not to do it. Right? So here you see we have the tag element photo database. We have not closed the tag element and we have started writing the comment in that case. And this is very wrong. So then we have the processing instructions. These are enclosed by less than sign, question mark, whatever the processing instruction is. And then you close that processing instruction with question mark and greater than sign. For example, if you're writing your HTML code, and if you have to write some script, a PHP script in that, or a Perl script, or another language script, you can tell the compiler that, okay, I'm writing this HTML page, but in that page, I need to write this script, a PHP code, or let's say a JavaScript. Okay, so you can start with these notations and you can close with these notations, and it follows right after this. So whatever you are trying to say. So here is an example. We see that we have a processing instruction. So the compiler knows that I need to process this. I need to do process it using the compiler, whatever this language is. So in this case, we see that we have a processing instruction, and the type of the processing should be PHP. So it's a PHP code. And then you start writing whatever you can, regardless of the XML formatting, because now this is not an XML. You have started another language in this case. So as soon as the compiler is reading the XML code from up, when it comes here, it will understand that this is not the part of the XML, but this is some processing code for the compiler to compile it or to execute it. And then whatever you write, it should be specific to that language you specified here, and then you close it. Okay. So you can have these kinds of processing instructions as you could have in the HTML page, right? So just to think about, we saw that when we are writing this XML structure, the very first line, we have this less than sign, question mark, and XML. And then we have the XML version, the encoding scheme, and the standalone application. So does that mean that we are telling the compiler that it's the start of an XML code? So is this also a processing instruction? What do you think? Sleepy? All sleepy? So you can think about that, right? Yeah. Okay, so until what we have seen now, that what XML is, what it stands for, what it can do, how it differentiates itself from the HTML, what are its advantages, what are its primarily objectives, why we need to have a separate data storage entity if we can do it in XML or in HTML or any other programming language. Now we are going to very quickly see the same example. We have seen that XML has a root and it branches out to leaves. So this is the same example that we have seen here. Now this is an advanced example from the support vector graphics. Okay, we will not dissect this example here, but what we are trying to see is, does it follow the same XML structure? And here we see that we have the SVG, it's a root node, and we are closing this root node. Then there is this definition node, and we are closing it over here. Okay, so here you see that the root node is on the first level, and then the definition node, definition element, is at the second level. It's bit ident from the left. Okay, and also if you see the rectangle function, it's at the same level as this one. That means that the root is SVG, it has two childs, definition and the rectangle, right? The definition has further elements, and these elements are again a tab indent. Okay, so this is linear gradient, which is child to definition, and then we have stop elements, which are further part of this element. So now we can represent this XML structure as a tree to understand how it looks like. Okay, so if you have an XML file, and if you can convert your XML file into a tree structure without any problems, that means that your XML structure is well-formed structure. So that's a one way of testing your XML code. Now most of these compilers, they have this built-in validation system. So even if you do not write some of these tags, they'll be able to tell you. But since XML uses this user-defined tags, so the compiler might not know whether it's the start of an element or not. So one way of rechecking and revalidating is this one, but that's how you can visualize how the XML file looks like. It's a tree structure. Okay. So you can display a tree structure in your browser. If your browser knows the tags, element tags that you have been using, it will display the output values. If it does not know what the tags that you are using, then it will display a list of nodes and elements like this in your browser, and if you press and click this node, it will become expanded and you can see further child nodes like this. So your browser will display something like this if you execute an XML file. If the browser does not have the predefined elements that you are using in this case. Now there are quite many tools that you can use in Firefox. There is this Firebug and Firepath that you can download as an add-on for your Firefox, and you can use it to execute your XML code. You can check. or you can Google XML validators. And you can find many free versions of online validators where you can copy and paste your XML code and it can check whether it's a valid XML or if there are some mistakes. Now we have already discussed this character set very quickly. Okay. And the character set basically defines the encoding scheme and the encoding mechanism. We have already discussed that. Why do we need to have that? For the browsers to understand what kind of language is used and what kind of symbols are used in your document, so it can correctly interpret and represent those values in your browsers. If you do not have the right character set defined, you might have problem displaying the web pages. For example, if your browser does not have the language set or the character set specified for Japanese language, and if you start browsing some Japanese or Chinese websites, instead of sometimes appearing the Japanese or Chinese characters text, you might see the blocks appearing. Quite often it happens on your mobile devices. If you open a page which your mobile does not recognize the language, it shows these blocks. And it's been able to do it because it does not recognize. Previously, when we had these old phones, you send some messages, and if you are sending some messages in English, it works perfect. But if you start sending the messages in Norwegian, and if you start using some additional characters, the other person is another country might not be able to see those characters. They might see some jumbled text because they do not have that language specification in their mobile. So that what is it's defined in the browsers, but this is not too important for you to actually understand. Okay. The last thing is the namespaces. Many languages have these namespaces, and quite often you might have a problem where you have similar tag elements. One might be coming from HTML, the other might be coming from some different domain. For example, let's say we have a table here, okay, and I close this table here. You know, this is a tag in HTML, in XML. It's an element, right? And this is correct because we started it, we closed it. But how about if I start writing TR? You know what TR stands for? It's a tag for the start of the row in HTML. So if you are creating a table, in HTML, you have the predefined table tag. You can close this table tag, you can define the row, you can close the row, and in this you can define table data, you can close the table data, and you can have any value given over here as a text, right? So the value could be, let's say, course name. Okay, so this will appear over here in the first row, in the first column. But how about if I'm writing in an XML code and I'm using this table also, I'm using the XML, HTML code also in the XML, and if I have, let's say, another table as a node on the same level, okay, and I close it over here, table, and then in this one, this is not the same element I'm using, not the HTML code, but I'm using my own user-defined element. Because in XML, you can create user-defined elements. So if I'm using this table as a user-defined element, and in this table, now this table, in my case, is not this table. This table, in my case, is a table, is a household table, a desk, right, a furniture. But I'm using the same word because it's what I want to use. That's what I'm doing actually. I'm creating a table, right? So I'm giving a name to that table. So I'm using a name tag, right? And I can close the name tag. And then whatever the name of the table is, let's say chipboard table, white table, black table, round table, whatever it might be. But it's not this table, it's a different table. And I could have width element that specifies the width of the table. I could have height element. I could have color because these are user-defined files. You know? So now what happens is, when the compiler sees this table, it sees this table, and when the values are different, it gets confused and it will halt. So you need to refer it to someone. You need to refer it properly. For example, if my name is Ali and if some other guy comes here and he is also Ali, if you call the name Ali, we will both respond or we will both get confused, right? So either we need to have a last name which is different, so then you can take the full name to clarify whom you are responding to, whom you are talking to, right? So that's what we have namespaces for. So in namespaces, we add a prefix. For example, this is a table. So let's say I can add a prefix H here. So wherever I'm using its tags, I will use a prefix here, prefix here, prefix here. That means this table row is this, belongs to this. All these elements in this belong to this. So the compiler will not get confused. For this one, it's a table and it's a type of a table furniture. So I can write an F prefix to represent it. So wherever I'm writing these attributes and further elements, I can prefix it with the F element. So that's what basically namespaces are for. So it distinguishes between elements and attributes from different XML vocabularies, because XML share the vocabulary of HTML also. So XML has the same vocabulary which HTML has. So you might often run these kinds of situations. And then the namespaces comes into place. So the names allow two or more XML vocabularies to use the same document. So if in a document you have to have these two somehow, you are writing an application where you have to have this XML table, you need to create this XML table and you need to have this kind of elements which uses the same name. So you can resolve it using this namespaces. It groups all related elements and attributes, elements and if it has any attributes, to part of this group, to this node. Okay. So easier to be recognized by the software. Here is an example of namespaces. So what do? When you're writing your root element, okay, for example, here the root element is description. Now you will see the tag is a bit different. It's XMLNS. So XML, extensible markup language, NS stands for namespaces. So that means you are defining a namespace, and you're defining a namespace with two dots, DC. DC is a user specified label. It could be anything. In my case, I have here used H for my convenience, that this is an HTML tag. Here I've used F, that this is a furniture element. So DC here is a user specified label. And the next part is the URI, Uniformed Resource Identifier. The compiler does not care whatever it is, because the compiler does not browse to that location. But that location is only given for the compiler to know that this is a unique identifier. And many programmers, they give the link to what the namespaces refer to. Okay, so that's what you can do as an example over here. So here we see we have a description, and you specify in the root the namespace. So if I have a root here, let's say this is my document and I'm writing this name document, I can define it as, let's say, DC, HTTP link, which becomes a unique identifier, and I close this document here. Okay. So you can define your namespace once in the root node, that's it. And you can use that DC value with all those prefixes. So here, for example, we have the title. Now we have prefixed it with the DC. That means that this title belongs to this description. This creator belongs to this description, to make it convenient for us to understand that we are referring this person, right? And then this is explained the same thing. So we have the prefix. So this is user defined. Then we have the local part, which is the creator in this case, right? And the URI could be anything, but this is usually used as a location. Okay, it's a link. The compiler does not browse to that link, but this link actually gives a unique identifier to the namespace. Okay. So that's it. There is nothing special about it. And this is an example that uses this default namespace. So here we see we have this XVG support vector graphics. We have the XML namespace, and this page refers to the specification of namespace.